new class, Ecclesiastes. That's where you meant to be. That's where you're at. So there are a couple of handouts that you can pick up. So I wanted to start out today with maybe some pictures, if Derek's got those, and just to illustrate the book of Ecclesiastes. So this is a tombstone from a cemetery down around Lamont. You may know where Lamont's at. I know a few of you do. 2 miles outside of the little town of Lamont. There probably aren't more than 10 vehicles that go by this cemetery on a daily basis. A very remote area, windswept. That's an old cemetery, but it contains generations of my family and generations of other people's families as well. So I've got the lineup on the chalkboard over here, and this is for an illustration of Ecclesiastes 1:4, which says, "One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever." Franz Ott was born in Germany, and he was born in 1813, I believe. Let's see, no, 1812. I don't think you can read it on here. He was born in 1812, died in 1886, and his tombstone shows its age. I think he is the oldest person in this cemetery, or dated as far back. I think 1812 is the oldest person, so he would be one of the very first people that was in this country, probably. So he married Elizabeth, and Elizabeth, that's her tombstone. She was born in 1823 and died in 1885. They had a daughter named Mary Ott, who married Matthew Ott. So that's the next one there. Thank you, Derek. So an Ott married an Ott. It's okay, right? Apparently, this Matthew Ott was born in the Black Forest region of Germany, and so they called them the Black Forest Otts, and this was a different, Franz Ott was a different line of Otts. So I think Perry's line of Otts is even a different line of Otts, from my understanding. So Matthew and Mary had 14 children, two of which died in youth. One fell out of an upper story window in their house and died. I'm not sure how the other one died, but 12 of them survived to adulthood. They all got married and had lots of kids. One of those children was Emma Ott, and she was born in 1890. It's my grandmother, and married John Wernley. I'm named after my grandfather. And he came from Switzerland in 1903, and they got married. And so they had Roy Wernley, youngest of six children, married Betty Knapp, and then that's the end of what's in the cemetery in Lamont at this point anyway. Then myself, married Maria. Where'd Maria go? Anyway. Chanel married Daniel Cannaday. She has four children. Interestingly enough, if you were to go back, clear back to Franz Ott, in this church, like you take Chelsea Jones, her line goes clear back to Franz Ott. I don't know if you knew that or not. And Matthew Huber, Matt Huber. The Huber family goes back to Mark, to this point right here. Matthew and Mary Ott. And the Swansons are in here. They would come in right here along with the Cannadays and whatever. So it's kind of interesting. There's some of those branches that are out there, this generational thing. So what's my point in all this? My point is that Ecclesiastes is really right. One generation comes, one passes away, another generation comes, the earth abides forever. So if you go out to that cemetery, it's the same as it was a long, long time ago, right? The land's the same, the earth just continues on. But Solomon made that observation that we come and go. So that's just a way of illustrating a point of Ecclesiastes. I may use a few other of these through the course of this class. But really what I want to do in lesson number one, which is going to extend over probably several Sundays, I don't expect to get through this handout by any means today, not even close. But it's really an introduction day, make some observations. We'll get into some keywords and some themes. I like the observation part of studying a book. I think if you do observation really well, you kind of understand the book by the time you get into the finer parts of it. So that's really my hope and goal. So after a couple of Sundays of observation and just getting into the keywords and themes, then I'll go chapter by chapter, but more theme by theme, if that makes sense, because Solomon's a lot in Ecclesiastes, a lot like he is in Proverbs. He kind of comes back to things. So don't expect a verse by verse, but maybe more theme by theme as we move ahead. So why Ecclesiastes? Well, every year I try to do a reading plan which just includes just reading straight through the scripture. I've varied before, but every year when I get to Ecclesiastes, it's like one of my favorites. And I've always wanted to just dig into it deeper. I think it's one of my favorites because it just gives me such an eternal mindset, and it's just such a dose of reality. And I think the scripture is good for everything. It's profitable for everything. And so I want to get into Ecclesiastes and talk about that. It's a sobering book, but yet it's also a hope-filled book, surprisingly enough. Another reason would be simply 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. That's one of our favorite verses around here. But all scripture is God-breathed and it's profitable. It's good to teach us, to correct us, to reprove us, to instruct us in righteousness so that we can be furnished for every good work. So I think that's just another reason. Ecclesiastes is another, it's one of the wisdom books, another reason why I would want to do it. Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes are considered the wisdom books. And we're told in Proverbs to get wisdom. It's a principal thing. So we should be getting wisdom. This is good for us to get wisdom. One writer said that Proverbs is the practical, is practical wisdom. Ecclesiastes is reflective wisdom. And I kind of like that. Proverbs is very practical in its wisdom. Ecclesiastes gives us more of a reflective type of wisdom. So I'm looking forward to that. So I want a little feedback here, because there's a lot of different ways you can look at the book of Ecclesiastes, and I didn't really realize this when I was getting into this. This is a more, there's more different thoughts on this than comes to mind originally, probably. So you kind of got to take your path or mix all of the different ways you can take the book of Ecclesiastes in order to get it right. But what do you think of when you think of the book of Ecclesiastes? And I really want quite a bit of input here, because it's really going to frame a little bit how I address some things. So I have a suspicion, some of you, not a suspicion, I have an idea of what some of you may think and what Ecclesiastes really is, and at least it was for me. So give me some feedback here. What do you think of?
Everything's futile.
Everything's futile. Mm-hmm. Futile life. Okay.
I think that there's a time for everything. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See, a man, he kind of, the whole thing is he's explored all of life, trying to find happiness in every avenue. And at the end, comes to the conclusion that it's not found there.
Yeah. Kind of hedonism a little bit.
Enjoy the work God has given you to do.
Good. That's pretty insightful. Not everybody thinks that work is enjoyable.
It's a very balanced book. On one hand, everything's futile, but on the other hand, you're supposed to enjoy everything. So it kind of brings a balance to how do I view life?
Yeah. That's really the handout I gave you, which we'll get to probably today. Life is a vapor, enjoy it, kind of what you're talking about. It's kind of a contrast. It's kind of futile and it's short, but on the other hand, enjoy the good gifts that God has given you. What else? What words would you use to describe futile? We've heard that. What are some other words you'd use to describe?
Vanity.
Vanity? Yeah. That is a word that's used a lot. I think it's like 40, 38 times, actually. We're going to get into that. We won't get to it today, next week. But the understanding of that word is key to understanding Ecclesiastes. Because it has kind of a multi, literally the word means vapor or breath. But it also has some other subtle meanings too that kind of shade it in several different directions depending on the context. What else?
I think there's some frustration. I think there's
definitely
approaching things. He's approaching something that he thinks is going to be great, and then it never works, and he's frustrated.
Yeah. Kind of goes along with the futility. Mm-hmm. There's a frustration about things that we do. The curse is evident.
One of the things I note is as he pursues joy, he has wealth. So he can basically pursue whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing holds him back because he has the wealth to get it.
Yeah. He can do whatever he wants to, basically.
It's the sad part, though, because he had three things that God told him not to do. And he did them anyway to try them out. So.
It's believed that Ecclesiastes was written later in Solomon's life. That he probably wrote Song of Solomon as a young man, and Proverbs middle-aged, and Ecclesiastes after living life, right? So he's probably 60 years or older when he wrote this, was able to look back and reflect, and I think that's probably right, that was the time when he did that. Any other words you would use to describe the book of Ecclesiastes?
I think I usually get more of the idea of gloom and doom. I mean, you do all this and then you die.
I was hoping somebody would come up with that, Marlon. It's kind of a depressing book if you look at it in one way, right? Doom and gloom. Yeah. Why am I doing all this? You know, I was working on some trees yesterday. I'd planted a couple apricot trees and I was straightening one because it's been leaning, and so I re-staked it, and there's some new growth coming up, and I'm thinking, I hope it grows some apricots pretty soon. And thinking, well, because I'm in Ecclesiastes, somebody else may reap the fruit off of this tree. So it's kind of like, what's the purpose, right? That's kind of Ecclesiastes a little bit. And I hope somebody does, you know. I'm reaping the fruits of other people's efforts in the past. But anything else? If you're afraid to say it, I think what Marlon said is it can come across as depressing. Would we all say that in some respects? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a word that we would probably put with Ecclesiastes. There's a tone of futility, a tone of meaninglessness, fatalism almost, a little bit, possibly. When I think of Ecclesiastes, I always just think of the swiftness, the short length of life, how quickly it passes, and how quickly it's over with. And look back at, you know, these generations, and like they just boom, 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 just rattling off really quickly. And I think of the book of Ecclesiastes, I always think of the closing, the summary, chapter 12. And I think Ecclesiastes, we think of it maybe like this class is younger in many respects, but I think it's really good for young people. He closes chapter 12, you know, with "Remember your Creator." Chapter 12, while you're young, Then he gives this long list of reasons why you should do that before all these things happen. And some of you who are gray-headed in here are shaking your head along with me as we understand, okay, you should do this while you're young. So it's really an urgent call in my mind for younger people. Solomon's really good about addressing that in all of his writings. So I think this is a good book to go through, not just for old, but for young as well. How has Ecclesiastes impacted your life and walk with God? Is there any particular way that, because we're in the soul care class, how has it contoured your life, grown you, corrected you, been beneficial to you? Any verse that just sticks out that's really been a... memory verse or one of your life verses or made a difference in your life?
I think, like you said, to me, chapter 12, just when I think of Ecclesiastes, I think of chapter 12 and learning wisdom while you're young before you... It says before you have no pleasure in the days that you're living in. So you're growing older. So in that way, like you said, it can be depressing how we're just one day at a time getting older and older. What are we going to do with the time God's given us before we get to that point where we, I don't know, we've all observed nursing home residents. You can see that there's no joy in life. You think, well, is that my future for people that lose their memory or just lose function of their body? And you think, well, that's just the curse of sin, but that's where we're all marching towards. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to survive that? So, yeah.
I think if you were to, I think chapter 12 is really key in this. If you were to put a therefore between the end of chapter 11 and before chapter 12, and it kind of is that way, remember, you know, your creator. But everything before that really does prepare you for the dying. Mm-hmm. You start dying, start dying from the day we're born, basically. But
it kind of speeds up at the end.
It speeds up at the end. It does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That resonates with people of 55 or 60 in this room. I can tell you that. So, yeah, it speeds up. The decline goes pretty good.
John, I think it's helped me not to get so... when I see the world go up and down with everything, elections and the economy and all kinds of things, I think it helps the perspective. I think two phrases from Ecclesiastes is there's nothing new under the sun. So, okay, we're not in some totally unique thing that nobody's ever seen before. And then this also is vanity and the striving after the wind. So, like, it helps me to not get too upset when I don't get something or something doesn't happen. Because it's, well, that's vanity anyway if I'm putting my hope there. And then nothing new under the sun, so it just helps me kind of stay, you know, steady with a better perspective on life.
I think that's that reflective wisdom that Ecclesiastes gives. Yeah, it's spot on.
With the time for everything, I mean, it does help you understand that tough times probably will pass. They say this too shall pass. Understand that it's just a sort of, I mean, it's just fine. Mm-hmm. For everything.
It's very comforting to know there's a time for everything. Mm-hmm. Time to be born and a time to die. Right? That's pretty amazing. Anything else?
I think regardless of our circumstances, helps me to focus on the really important things, and that I should have joy. That would be hard to do apart from the Lord. But just to enjoy life and not let the stress mm-hmm. and everything interfere with that.
a great point. If nothing else, when we're done with this class, however many sessions down the road, I hope that that is kind of your conclusion. Life is a vapor, it's short. Yep, there's frustration, there's futility, but enjoy the God-given gifts that he's given you while you live this life under the sun, knowing that you will come to judgment. So remember, fear God, keep his commandments. This is your whole duty. It really is just a really encouraging, uplifting book in the end. But enjoy the good gifts that God has given you. Eat a steak instead of a slice of bologna, okay? Kind of thing, a little bit. I'm halfway serious about that. My wife is whispering back there, so. Don't be chintzy. Be generous. Enjoy it. Enjoy the good gifts that God's given you. That's where I'm going with it, right? You know, after you're gone, you look back like, well, why didn't I eat that steak? Why didn't I live life without regret, unreservedly. Get to some of that later on. So.
And John, it's a good thing. Every perfect gift is from above. So.
Yeah.
So.
There's a tie-in from Ecclesiastes to that verse in James. There definitely is, and we'll cover that at some point. I want to just share with you at some point. I'm not always going to quote the references or resources I use, but I want to make sure that you understand some of what we're going to be going over comes from some different resources and references. I have found the study notes from the MacArthur Study Bible are good. They're clear, and I think there's a clarity and an accuracy to them. The New English Translation, the NET Bible, don't know if you're very familiar with that, but the notes from the editors in there are outstanding. If you're a teacher or a Bible study leader, I think you should have a copy of that. And the editors go into depth on why they chose the words they chose and go into the, in this case, into the Hebrew in a way that I find really rich and deep. And I think their notes are extensive. They're in depth. They're informative. They're a little more, not seminary level, but they're a little bit more in depth. They're pretty deep, but still understandable for me, which means they're not too far out there. Anyway, I really like it, so it's not unusual to have 6 or 8 or 10 verses on a page and the rest of it's notes that are really, really helpful. I appreciate the fact that they went into that much depth. I think that's really added to the understanding of the scripture. I also like the New Living Translation, the notes that come from it, in case you happen to have that copy. I will say this, New Living Translation translates vanity, the Hebrew word is hebel, as meaninglessness or meaningless, and that is an unfortunate translation, I think. So just a heads up on New Living Translation. I think it and the NIV both use that, and I think that's not the primary translation for that particular word. Also, using Ecclesiastes, the Philippians of the Old Testament by William Barrick. And it really goes back to what Alan just said. So his subtitle tells you everything, the Philippians of the Old Testament. So what comes to your mind when you think of the book of Philippians?
Joy.
Joy. So that's the route he takes. That, you know, Ecclesiastes is a lot like Philippians, rejoice, enjoy. He really builds a great case for it. I mean, he covers it very well. William Barrick was a professor at the Master Seminary. Always loved his talks when we'd go out there. He's one of the world's experts in Hebrew. So I really like his take on Ecclesiastes, so I'm going to use some of that. He focuses on joy and enjoying the gifts God has given us while we're here on this earth, knowing they're temporary here and they are encompassed by the fact we live in a frustrating, futile world, but it's a foretaste of what is going to come in eternity, where there will be no interruption, everything will be permanent, everything will be good, we'll enjoy it forever. So that's really his point in it, and I think he does an excellent job. If you want another book, that would be a good one. So I was going to read what was said about it in the back cover of his book. What is the purpose of life? The preacher in Ecclesiastes, just like so many today, was in search of life's meaning. Like us, he looks through his limited worldview and all he finds is vanity, vanity, pure emptiness. We are in search for something which will have eternal value. To find it, we need to look beyond ourselves. This is what the preacher discovers, that man is powerless, yet God has a design and purpose for all things. He's the giver of all life and gives all life its meaning. In this book, we are given clear teaching about the doctrine of God as well as the doctrines of mankind, salvation, and future judgment. We find that God is the giver, sustainer, and purpose of our life on this earth and in eternity to come. And this book, more than any other, really got me to looking at the theology part of Ecclesiastes. If you think of Ecclesiastes, you probably don't think of a deep theological book. I was mistaken in that. And William Barrick, as you would suspect, somebody from the Master Seminary, goes into depth into the references to God in the book. And we're going to get to those, and I think we might go through every one of them. I'm not sure yet. But it's actually, there's a table with that in one of the pages. But that's really what I took away from his book, is just the theological depth of God in the book of Ecclesiastes. And I think it's a mistake when we do observation if we don't ask ourselves, what do we learn about God in this book? What is this scripture? What is this book saying about God? And I think if we understand that the Bible is God's revelation of himself to mankind and to the universe, then we should be saying, what do we find out? What's revealed about God? Looking forward to that. If you take, there's a time and a purpose for everything under heaven, that points to God's sovereignty. And the sovereignty of God, the judgment of God, all of that is just really fascinating. There's 40 references to God in the book of Ecclesiastes. William Barrick does a great job of bringing that out. Also, got the Wiersbe Bible Study Series on Ecclesiastes. It's more of a small group Bible study type approach with a lot of questions. Haven't used a lot of it, but just mentioning it because there is a thing or two I've taken away from it. As far as a commentary, I'm using Ecclesiastes, Why Everything Matters by Philip Ryken and R. Ken Hughes. R. Ken Hughes has big input in that book, and it's very good as well. My two favorites are Living Life Backward, How Ecclesiastes Teaches Us to Live in Light of the End by David Gibson. And I understand that the worship team that went to the Sovereign Grace Conference, you guys got that book. Mm-hmm. Yep. So my second favorite, but it's really right up there at the very top. So it's Living Life Backward with Backward. Backward. Okay. So a good play there. But just getting a nugget or two out of it. He says this in his preface, living in the light of your death, and that's really how we need to live life. Living in the light of your death will help you to live wisely and freely and generously. It will give you a big heart and open hands and enable you to relish all the small things of life in deeply profound ways. So, he continues, Ecclesiastes teaches us to live life backward. It encourages us to take the one thing in the future that is certain, our death, and work backward from that point into all the details and decisions and heartaches of our lives, and to think about them from the perspective of the end. It is the destination that makes sense of the journey. If we know for sure we're heading, I like this, if we know for sure we're heading, then we can know for sure what we need to do before we get there. Ecclesiastes invites us to let the end sculpt our priorities, our goals, our greatest ambitions, and our strongest desires. I want to persuade you that only if you prepare to die can you really learn how to live. So that's from Living Life Backward. And it's become probably my favorite going through this. Don't waste your breath. You notice the breath is kind of like a misty a little bit. So that's a play on the word hebel, vanity. Don't waste your vapor. don't waste your short life. It's a little bit play on John Piper's "Don't waste your life." This is "Don't waste your breath." It's "The Joy of a Fleeting Life" by Brian Borgman, who probably 60 years old or so, pastor in church. I like that a pastor wrote this, who's buried and married people and been through all the grief and heartache. He's had brain surgery himself and has had a lot of difficulties. But just a few comments about this book. Your life is a mere breath. This really can be difficult for us to live by. Kind of is, right? It's kind of discouraging, like so short. The book of Ecclesiastes takes us on a journey to show us that although this life is a vapor, it is still a gift from God meant to be enjoyed. I love that. That's what I like about this book. It really focuses on it's a vapor, but enjoy it. Instead of giving a pessimistic look at life under the sun, Ecclesiastes shows us how to glorify God in this fleeting life by enjoying the ordinary good gifts God bestows. I think when you take the word vanity and make it meaningless, that takes away our purpose in this earth, which is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. You know, from past creeds have been thrown down. So I think that's really the bottom line of Ecclesiastes. Glorify God. At the end it says, fear God, keep His commandments. That's glorifying Him and enjoy Him now and forever. Enjoy all the good gifts that God has given you. Paul Washer said of this book, "I will never look at the book of Ecclesiastes the same way again. After reading this work, I found a renewed freedom, even compulsion, to enjoy all of God's temporal gifts, a clarity and a confidence to endure the trials of this fallen age, and lastly, a steadfast hope that does not disappoint. I am greatly indebted, you will be too." Joel Beakey says that Borgman demonstrates that Ecclesiastes is not about life's vanity or lack of purpose, but its vapor, its lack of permanence. Be prepared to have your assumptions about Ecclesiastes transformed. Jim Neuheiser, biblical counseling man, says that this is not a book Brian could have written when he was 30. He needed to pastor the same congregation for 30 years, marrying and burying, to become a grandfather, to undergo brain surgery, to gain the wise personal insights he offers in this book. Brian Borgman, I think, is the champion of the view of Ecclesiastes being life short, enjoy it. It's really about that as opposed to life's depressing and meaningless and leave reading it like, I wish I wouldn't have read that book, wish it wasn't in the scripture. It's actually good for us. Oh, I hope I'm not boring you with this, but this is just some stuff that was helpful for me. And I'm going to look for... This is also from Paul Washer about this book. As you read through this work, you'll be confronted with the realities of life in a fallen world. And I think that's reality. It's a real book. It confronts us. Yes, there's suffering, pain, death, and oftentimes an encroaching sense of futility. However, for the believer, the brevity of life is an incentive to live life to the fullest, and the uncertainties of life are opportunities to trust in an omnipotent, loving, and faithful Creator who gives good gifts to His children and will one day make all things new. Contemporary Christianity, especially in the West, is filled with extremes. On one hand, and I think this is a really good point, on one hand, there are voices urging believers to live their best life now, almost in disregard of eternity. On the other hand, there are voices admonishing us to put our heads down, look for nothing in this life, and mournfully long for heaven. And you see that in different persuasions of churches. You see some who are so sober and so sad that they can't have any joy, and then you have other people who are out here who are going to the other extreme and seem to be like, this is all there is, this earth, and really take it to an extreme. Dr. Borgman sweeps away both extremes by simply expounding the book of Ecclesiastes. And I think that's the point. He just simply expounds it and brings it out. He shows us that we are to relish every good thing as a gift from God, face every hardship with hope in a sovereign God, and await a new heaven and earth with great expectation. I will never look at the book of Ecclesiastes the same way again. And then what I've already quoted from Washer, he repeats again. So I think it's a really good book that's helped shape how I'm going to present this class, not leaving out the depressing, futile, what's the purpose of life? Because that's in there, the frustration. That's very real. If you got hailed on this week, you have some frustrations, futility, right? Like, what's the use? My bean crop, my corn crop, my garden, whatever, is destroyed. So I think Ecclesiastes wrestles more, I think this book, he says it wrestles more with the brevity of life as opposed to the meaninglessness of life. And I like that, and I think that's something we really need to keep in mind as we go through this book. I think another reason this book has appealed to me, because it really helps answer some thoughts I've had through life. He's more personal, more to the heart. I remember when I was a senior in high school, Jim Satterfield in this church is also a classmate. We were playing basketball. We were in the sub-state finals at White Auditorium, and I remember walking in with him and looking out at the court and saying, we're never going to be here again. It's kind of a play on the Eagles song. That's back before I was a Christian. But take it easy. I don't know if you know the song. Didn't have the best of lyrics at places, but it says, we may win or we may lose, but we'll never be here again. I didn't say that we may win or we may lose because we're going to win, right? It was just this thought of, like, this is sad. We've worked on this for 6 years, and this is going to be our last game on this court. And so I remember last year coming home from a family trip to Florida with the children and grandchildren. Great, best of trips. But yet when I started coming home, I was like sad. Like it went so fast. So I don't know if you've had those senses or those, you planned something and you do it and it's short and it's gone. It's like, wow, it just kind of leaves a certain sadness to us. He really addresses all of that. And I think that's really appealed to me. How do you put that all in perspective? So I kind of like that element that he brings. He's just very real about thoughts and feelings that humans have. Okay, any questions or any feedback at this point? All right, I think I'll be done with the resource part of it, and let's go to the title on the next page. Anybody know what Ecclesiastes means? You can take a shot at it. About the church, yeah. In the New Testament, it's Ecclesia. Ecclesia, yeah. Got to get that right. So it's an assembly. That's what we are. We're an assembly. We're an ecclesia. We're a church. That's basically the meaning of the title Ecclesiastes, except it goes to the preacher element of that. It's derived from ecclesia, which is translated assembly or congregation in the New Testament, but the Hebrew title is Kohelet, which one who calls or gathers the people. So it refers more to the one who is assembling the people. It's one who addresses the assembly. Hence, preacher would be another translation of that word. You could also call the book Ecclesiastes preacher. So this is Solomon the preacher. One who speaks in the assembly would be the title, if you want to go that route. Ecclesiastes was read on the third day of Pentecost by rabbis in the synagogue. So the Feast of Pentecost, they would read Ecclesiastes on the third day. Bill Berick said that the third day of the Feast of Tabernacles, or Booths, was in late September, early October. It was a time of celebration, really, of bringing their feast in, their first fruits in. It was an annual harvest festival. So he would read the book the third day, and he made the point that reading this book during a festival of joy provides a big clue that at least the Jews believe that this was a joy-filled book, not a pessimistic book. I thought that was a really good point. authorship. Who's the author? We know that from verse 1, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, in verse 12 of chapter 1, king over Israel and Jerusalem. I'm surprised and shocked at the number of people that try to discount him as the author and make somebody else to be the author. I think it's really clear. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but there's people that spend pages. I think sometimes seminary professors think, well, I got to find my niche. I want to go prove something that nobody else has ever thought of before. But so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. He's the author of Song of Solomon, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. It's a really a book that is the philosophical and theological bent of wisdom. And really, really think it's very simple. He is the author, and he's the preacher that is talking about. As far as themes of Ecclesiastes, primary purpose would be just the teaching of wisdom, overall wisdom. That's the big picture look. I think you could also say that, the curse brings futility and frustration, and life can be hard, but man's chief end really is here, glorify God and enjoy him. Just think right off the top of your head, what does the book of Ecclesiastes tell us to enjoy? Can you think anything? I think Nathan said earlier, work. What else would we enjoy from the book of Ecclesiastes?
Your youth.
Your youth?
Your wife.
Your wife?
Food and drink.
Food and drink? And I love that. That's why you should be eating steak, not bologna. Also raise cattle, right? So Alan and I, we want prices to go up. Anyway, y'all have been a good job of it. Keep it up. What else? All the good gifts that God has given you. And that's everything. So Joshua said earlier about, you know, James, all good and perfect gifts come from above. And that's one of the themes. Enjoy God and the good gifts he's given you in this curse-filled, frustration-filled life that will end. And then we'll go to a place where a renewed heaven and earth where it will be good forever. No more curse. No more partings. No more impermanence. Things will be the same forever. Okay, I think we'll stop there. And next week, Lord willing, we'll get into the revelation of God and his attributes and a deeper dive into the word vapor. Before we go, we got just a few minutes. I'm going to read this just so it can be in the recording, and just because I like it so well, I ran onto this article. It's in your handout, Life is a Vapor, Enjoy It. It does a good job of kind of reinforcing some of what we've already talked about. I stood at the window with my coffee in hand, enjoying the unique stillness of a Saturday morning. The clouds in the eastern sky were blushing in anticipation of the sun's imminent arrival. Between me and them, a mist was rising like the earth's exhaled breath, growing, shifting, and dispersing, glowing in the golden morning glory, a breath, a vapor. This is what King Solomon called life itself in the book of Ecclesiastes. Like your own breath in the crisp winter air, you can see it and feel the warmth of it, but one thing you can never do is hold it. That's what we try to do. We try to hold on to it. You might think that King Solomon was a pretty depressed guy to say things like this. Fair enough. He does say at one stage that he hated life because of how quickly everything you do and build and work for and love fades and disperses, especially after you're gone. He saw life honestly, realistically. How can we argue? Look at the generations before us and how quickly one passed into another and another, and now we're here and we're already passing the next generation, and the vapor is rising and the wind is picking up. We've got these few glorious moments in the golden sunshine, and what will we do with them? The wise king said that vapor life is not a curse if you learn to enjoy it, but you can really enjoy life when you see how transient it is? when it slips through your fingers, no matter how tightly you clench them? It's a good question. Those are good questions. Yes, you can. According to King Solomon, enjoying life comes from seeing it for what it is, not trying to make it into something it isn't. He says life is a gift from the hand of God. Every day, every blessing, every moment in the sun is pure grace from a creator who is everything we are not, eternal, solid, and unchanging. The sun that shoots through the morning mist and makes it shine so gloriously in his light, and every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows, James 1:17. Every breath, every smile, every slice of warm bread and ray of light sparkling across the water, the wind moves the treetops, and our lives move from our first steps greeted with cheers to our last with tears. We're only a vapor, a breath in the morning, rising, growing, dispersing. If you try to grasp life and hold it and store up its beauties and gifts, you'll always be frustrated and depressed. You won't even be able to enjoy the good gifts you have because you'll always be afraid of losing them. Settle this in your mind right now. You will lose them one way or another. Either they will go, or you will go, or you will. There's only one who can sustain your breath beyond your short season on earth, the same one who breathed life into you in the first place. He has promised more gifts to his children who trust him, gifts without end, all the way through eternity. But the gifts he gives you today are temporary, just like everything else on this planet. So unclench those fists and enjoy the gifts, even as they slip through your fingers. Enjoy them for what they are while you have them. Celebrate the day you're in right now. Live in the light of God's glory and rise to meet him, knowing that nothing on this earth can ever last and nothing in God's generous, eternal promises to his children can ever fade away. You can't control God's gifts or hold them beyond the time they're given, but you can enjoy them right now and trust him with the rest. So, from a pastor in British Isles, I'm not sure which one, I thought was really good. It's very uplifting and encouraging. Okay, see you next week, Lord willing, and we'll continue to move ahead.